Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and in today's episode, I'm speaking with nurse practitioner Dr. Molly Lupo. Molly shares with us why we need to look at body composition versus weight alone, how to use a tool called time crafting, and what her program Nourished entails. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode with someone who might find it helpful. Thank you so much, and as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes. Now on to my conversation with Molly. Dr. Molly Lupo, welcome to the show.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me.
My absolute pleasure. I'm really excited to talk about all things weight management, weight loss, and whatever else we are going to get into. But I'd love to hear from you to start off with. What's the main thing you are excited for the listener to learn today?
Oh gosh, okay. The main thing I'm excited for the listeners to hear about today, I think this is, I can never just pick one. I'm gonna pick two. Can I pick two?
Sure, of course.
Okay, so the first thing would be focusing on nutrition quality and focusing just on like the abundance of foods instead of like the restriction that comes in weight loss. And I know that there has to be, some sort of like calorie deficit for us to lose weight, but I don't like to think in that term because I think it gets too much in people's heads. And then the other piece I would just say is women come to me all the time, and part of what I think makes weight loss challenging and hard for busy moms, women, et cetera, working women, is it does require some forethought in how you prep your food, when you prep your food, when you're going to find the time. And I have struggled with it myself. And I read a book by Dr. Cassie Holmes, who it's all about time and how we spend it and just how we're prioritizing it. So I would also love for the listener to just understand how to actually do a time audit and then how to craft their week to week in a way where they're prioritizing the things that matter. And what I see as one thing that's like really helpful for women in weight loss is if someone is losing weight, they're doing really well. They're usually also saying the thing that's helped me a lot is having prepped food on hand. And so we have to like sort of craft the time in of like, when are we going to look at our grocery list, what we have, and what we're going to be shopping for and making a plan for it.
I think those are going to be some really valuable things to talk about, so I'm excited. And I'd love
Yeah.
to hear how you got into what you're doing today.
Oh gosh, it's such a long and windy road, but I basically started I started as a nurse. I worked in oncology for a few years. I then went and did my master's. I became a nurse practitioner. I actually stayed in oncology, and after I had our third baby, we needed a shift. We needed a change. It was in the middle of COVID. And I started my own practice doing more nutrition and lifestyle medicine. The biggest thing for me was I was seeing these patients every single day, day in and day out, and they were all saying like, "Well, what can I do in the face of this life-threatening diagnosis?" And you had 10, 15 minutes with them, and that's it. And I think I've always had a passion for just health and wellness and all of that. And so I started my own private practice at that time. Yeah, that's how I landed here. So I have a private practice doing more of the weight loss medication management side of it. And then I also have a coaching practice where we lean more into the nutrition and lifestyle pillars.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, I'm excited that you went out there and started your own thing. And very impressive doing all that with three kids as well. So hats off to
Four, actually.
four.
We've added one since then, but yeah.
Amazing. Well, congratulations on that. But yeah, let's talk about weight management. You mentioned that there is more than meets the eye, that there is a bit more nuance and that we need to look a little bit deeper. What exactly do you mean by that?
Oh yeah, I mean, weight management is so nuanced and complicated, and I think the thing that people don't understand is, yes, it is about calories in and calories out and creating sort of a small sustainable deficit for weight loss. But I think what the other piece that no one talks about is the biology of it. And so if you have gained and if you have lost weight over the years multiple times, those hunger hormones, your ghrelin, is so ghrelin is your growling hormone. That's when your stomach growls, tells you that you're hungry. So that actually sort of becomes dysregulated, and your leptin, how satisfied you are, that also becomes dysregulated. And so the moment that someone goes into a caloric deficit, you have to remember that the brain and body do not actually want to lose weight. They're sort of fighting against you to get back to that set point, because your brain has not evolved to know you're not being chased by the cheetah. I wish we had a better metaphor, but we don't. It's what we all use. And so literally your brain and body think you're sort of in this fight or flight state, and they're trying to preserve and hold on to any energy or calories you are giving it. And that is why people plateau in weight loss, because the body has adapted to those calories to preserve all the energy it possibly can to go fight the cheetah. And so I think what people don't realize is that when you go into any sort of caloric deficit, those hunger hormones go up, you're hungrier, and those the leptin, your more satiating hormones, go down. And so, and the by the drives, the drive of hunger and wanting to eat is very strong. And so, you know, some people might be able to sort of handle that nutrition, lifestyle, optimizing their protein, their fiber, balancing these things throughout the day, getting enough sleep. There's so many things. But for other folks, like that's where the weight management medications can be really helpful, because they're going to sort of help turn down that hunger noise for them, or the food noise you hear people talk about.
And what sort of role does food quality play within that?
Oh, I think food quality is huge, and our food environment is huge. We have, you know, at every corner now that you go to, right, there's a fast food option, there's a gas station. The quick and easy grabs are not always the most nutrient dense options, right? And if you're tired and if you're stressed, like your body and brain are craving those quick energy hits. And so having your environment prepped, so that's where I'm like kind of obsessed with like having food on hand that is prepped, that sort of aligns with your goals and where you want to go. I think it makes a huge difference. I think it is challenging for those who are like, well, I don't like to cook. And it's like, well, do you not like to cook? Or is it just that we need to hone in on a few techniques that could help you? But I think food quality is huge. When we look at, you know, the classic American diet, at least we know that Americans, there's a statistic that like 90% don't get enough fruits and vegetables. And so we absolutely need to be adding those in. And people get, you know, sort of real confused about all the rules that are out there and all the influencers and all of that. But the nutrition quality, I think, is huge for helping with that hunger and satiety.
Yeah, I would agree, especially, I mean, whether that be through fiber or whether it literally is connected with the micronutrients that we're consuming. But even just like learning to prepare the food yourself, I mean, in the preparation process, we're sort of priming our body for the digestion as well. And it, like the whole gut bile starts coming in and everything else. So if you're just going through the drive-through, you're missing out on a crucial part of the digestive process and therefore also the satiation process. So I really like what you said about being prepared. And even if it seems quote unquote unsexy having to pre-plan or so, but I think there's a lot of ways around that. It doesn't mean that we need to eat 10 of the same meals in a row. We can kind of play mix and match, or we can add different seasonings to mix things up. But yeah, tell us about your strategy, because you have a specific strategy that you teach your clients to kind of carve out the time to prep. What is it like, and what do you call it?
So again, this isn't my work. It's Dr. Cassie Holmes' work, and she has a book called Happier Hour that's really good. But I mean, I basically was like this version, right? Like, I have 4 kids. I work 4 days a week. And I was feeling just the strain of like, I could putz around the house all day doing things, and the list would never end. And so I read her book, and sort of the long and short of it is, for about 7 to 10 days, you do a time audit. So every 30 minutes, you're writing down what you do. But the part that takes it a step further is you write down what you do in those 30-minute increments, and then you rate how happy it made you, 0 to 10. I just could very quickly see like there were some things that were just like ranking super high up there for me. And at the end of those 10 days or however long you want to go, you pick those top three or top five things. Okay. And those are going to be the ones that you actually schedule in first. And for me, when I went to craft that, one thing that like popped out to me was like, oh, I am in such a good mood when we have food on hand and prepped because I don't have to then worry about it or go grab takeout quick, you know? I also was in a really good mood when the laundry got done, or you know, I'm kind of I've like realized like a lot of things where my priorities lie is in like trying to keep our house clean, keeping the fridge organized, keeping food on hand, pleasure like reading or downtime baking. I really like that stuff too. And so once you have sort of those top three to five things where those are your top sort of joy things that are bringing you, then you're going to look at your calendar and you literally just write out. And first you block off all your non-negotiables. So if you work like 9 to 5 every day, you're putting work in. If you commute an hour to your job, that gets a spot. And pretty soon what you're going to see is some blank space, hopefully. And in that blank space is where you can start to prioritize and plug in these other things that are important to you. It was an incredibly helpful tool for me. The other thing that I would add here is I don't think it's hers, but she talks about optimizing your energy. So like I'm totally a morning person. Like I get everything done in the morning, in the afternoon, I'm like, it's time to recover and rest and put my feet up. So knowing that about yourself and knowing sort of what your energy type is, like do you get more stuff done in the afternoon or are you a night owl, whatever. But that's helpful too for when you go to prioritize and put those things in.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's important to do a time audit like this from time to time because otherwise you're like, I don't know where to put this and that, or I don't know how this just got away from me. And it's so easy to quote unquote waste time. Like that might seem helpful. Let's just say you're answering messages or whatever, like
Yeah.
your WhatsApp or so, and you think, oh, I need to catch up with this. But if you actually dedicate 30 minutes specifically to it at a certain point, it's gonna actually take up less space, also less mental space, than if you do two messages here, three messages there, and you're always like half-assing stuff all the
Yeah.
time. And like half your mind is there, and you're not freeing up your mind for actually quote unquote productivity or planning ahead. So I think this is really, really important there.
Yeah, oh, that reminds me of two other things I want to share about this. One, I was totally the fragmented person where I was like, okay, got to sign the kids up for this. So I'll do it in between this patient or this client, and then I'll do this over, you know. And she really talks about how those are like just energy zappers. And what I started doing is I have like a notes app on my phone, I have a note for this, and I just call it like Lupo Admin Life. And when the thought pops up in my head, I put it in that list. And then when I'm time crafting the week, I say, like, this is the admin time, because then I can just knock out the entire list in 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and be done with it, versus acting on every single impulse. The other thing that I think is super important is taking however much time you have, 20, 30, 45 minutes, but sort of like visioning your month, going through your calendar. What is actually on your calendar this month? Like, do you need to buy birthday gifts? Do you need, is there a barbecue coming up? Like, get all of that stuff out of your head so you don't have to like be thinking about it in between. Because once your brain knows and it's settled that, okay, I've already addressed this. This is what we're gonna do. This is what I'm bringing for a gift. I've already ordered it, whatever. Then your brain can start to free up and start to think about some other
I
things.
love that. I'm sure that a lot of people wish that they would get to that point, and you've given a very actionable strategy to do so. So I think that's really, really important. And of course, even also when it comes to other long-term goals, let's just say you want to save up for something in particular because you have this garden project, or you want to run a marathon next year or so, like just using that time for visualization, because so many people, they don't live the life that they actually love, not because they don't ever take action on anything, but just because they're so stuck in their everyday rut and they never take the time to actually define on, okay, what it is that they want or how to get there. So I think this is really, really important.
I think you can start to feel just so wrapped up in the moments, and you start to like sort of the narrative becomes like, I just don't have time, and I just got to go from A to B to C to D, and now it's time for bed. And I think that the time audit, time craft, and then the vision piece of it is just, it can just change your, I've not had anyone do that time audit and time craft and not find some empty holes to fill their buckets back up, you know?
Very cool. Yeah. I heard this analogy or metaphor, whatever you want to call it, just recently, and it really hit home to me where it was like, okay, you are dealing with a gardener or someone who's cutting down a tree, and you tell them, hey, you need to take half an hour every day to sharpen your saw, and you'll actually cut the trees down within an hour. And the person turns to you and says, no, I'm too busy. I have three trees to cut down. And you're like, but why don't you stop? Cutting down the tree with a blunt saw is going to take you 4 hours. But if you stop and you sharpen it for half an hour, you're going to get it done in an hour and you're going to do an immaculate job at that. But I think so many people, like we're both smiling because it seems so obvious, but so many people are stuck in this. I can't take a pause, I can't meditate, I can't do all work out or whatever because I'm too busy. No, you're too busy because you don't make time for the things that will make your life easier, actually.
And I think, you know, the other piece of it is like the happiness piece of it. Like when you start prioritizing, you know, those top three to five things, the other part of your life, the other parts of your life are going to get easier because you're already like that mood, that energy is going to shift to the next project that you have or the next thing that you have to do, you know?
Very true. Yeah, I want to go back to the point of weight management or weight loss in general. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about body composition versus weight alone. So, why is it important that we pay more attention to body composition rather than just weight loss?
So the biggest reason I think for body composition versus just weight loss is A, just zooming out the lens. We have been taught and conditioned that the only thing that matters is the first thing that you do when you get up in the morning after you go to the bathroom is go step on the scale and is it up or is it down? And if it's up, now what am I going to do? Because now I'm feeling bad about myself and how am I going to restrict today and how am I going to, you know, and it's just a narrative that really doesn't serve you. And so, of course, body weight is one piece of the factor, but it's not all of it. Same thing with BMI, same thing with any of your metabolic profiles from your lipids to your fasting blood sugar, your fasting insulin, all of that stuff. It all has a place, it's all important. But if we zoom out the lens, there's more than just weight for how we feel. And so, body composition is just one more of those pieces that we can look at and start to say, oh, well, her body fat percentage is here. We would like it here. What are we going to do to get there? And the reason why it's important is because it's going to also sort of look at the bigger picture of your lean muscle mass, right? And your lean muscle mass is one thing that you have some control over, in that the more you strength train, the more that you progressively overload, you can build that lean muscle mass. That lean muscle mass is the only thing that can impact that basal metabolic rate in a to build it, to make it higher. And besides it building a higher caloric burn rate, it also does things like it helps so that as we age, that we're aging strong, that we don't end up getting osteoporosis, that we don't end up falling and breaking a hip. It makes insulin more sensitive. It makes your blood sugar more sensitive. It makes lipids better. And on top of all of that, just how empowering strength training can make you feel. I kind of got off on a tangent. I'm not really talking about, but it directly correlates to body composition. So, you know, the body composition is just one piece out of a big puzzle that we're looking at and that we want to say, where is it at? Do you want changes here? If you do want changes, what's our action plan for you to get there? And also just being patient with it, right? Because body composition doesn't change overnight. Like weight loss and weight gain can sort of falsely feel like, but body composition is the long game. Body composition is you leaning in day in and day out and building that strength to be able to see the results.
I love it. Yeah, I think unfortunately, if we're too scale focused, we're going down the wrong route because we are just leaning on things like cardio, which our body adapts to very quickly, and then you're hitting a plateau before you know it. You're just kind of creating like a weaker version of yourself, and people sometimes don't acknowledge that your weight can go up and your body fat percentage goes down at the same time. So it's like if you're so focused on the scale, you're not even giving yourself the chance really to celebrate that because truly, like less body fat, more muscle mass, and a higher scale weight is better than lower body weight and lower muscle mass, especially if we're looking at it long term. And unfortunately, you and I both know that we are losing muscle mass if we're not fighting to keep it as we age. And so you mentioned strength training being the main driver of that. I think that's really, really important, especially for women. And historically speaking, many women were afraid of having or doing resistance training or maybe just
They
in.
are still afraid. They are
Yeah,
still afraid. I had someone
unfortunately.
message me last week and she said, "Oh my gosh, I'm finally lifting heavier and I can see the body composition change, but I was so afraid for so long that I would get bulky."
That
And
is
it's like, nope, you got to work real hard to get there, sister.
absolutely, yeah, totally. And I think sometimes the other part is that they just say like, oh, I just love running, or it's easier to go running than go into the gym, or I love my group fitness classes and stuff. And I mean, mind you, not everybody needs to be lifting a super heavy barbell, but unfortunately, most group fitness classes with their tiny little like 1 or 2 pound dumbbells, you're gonna plateau out very quickly. And so yeah, shifting that into like, hey, I actually wanna like, how heavy are my groceries? You need to actually lift a little bit. If you have a grandchild at some point, do you want to be able to lift that child up? That child's probably going to be heavier than your 1 or 2 pound dumbbell. So,
Oh,
you
yeah.
need something comparable.
It's totally, and the piece of like the 1 to 2 pound dumbbells is so funny because it's so true, right? To build lean muscle mass, you have to overload the lean mass, right? You have to load it. Those muscle fibers are going to tear. And in that repair is when they rebuild. When they rebuild, they can rebuild stronger. And if you are not pushing yourself to that limit or whatever, it's going to be a lot harder for you to build that lean mass, feel the differences, all of that.
Absolutely, yeah. So I guess happy and unhappy to hear that you received that message yesterday, but it just goes to show that we can't over repeat that message enough, probably. And I mean, we touched on the point of like hitting a plateau if you're just running or just doing the same thing over and over. And I'd love to hear from you just as it pertains to weight management, how we can break through plateaus, whether that's through food or training.
Yeah, well, first of all, we have a lot of calculators out there to sort of estimate your energy expenditure, how much calories you're burning in a day. What I found with a lot of women, especially 40s and up, is you do these calculators, even the dietitian sort of the Harris Benedict equations, and their energy expenditure will say is 2,500, but they're coming to you eating 1,300 calories, 1,400 calories. So I actually stopped using calculators because I felt so kind of jarred by them because I can't convince you to go eat 2,500 calories if you are eating 1,400. You're never gonna believe me, right? And so the first thing I do with women is not go into a deficit. We actually try to find your maintenance calories. And we do that by a period of weighing and measuring what you're eating and trending your weights. And this is a place where weight can be helpful. And we are not tracking and measuring in that time frame to lose weight. I just tell them, just eat until you're satisfied. And most of them have never heard that in their entire lives. And that feels very foreign. But then they start to say, oh my gosh, actually I have better energy. I actually feel better. Oh my gosh, this feels so much different. Okay. And then from there, so once I build them to at least a place where I feel like they can cut without sacrificing a ton of hunger and satiety, like dysregulation, then I will cut them. But I only do it for like 8 to 12 weeks max. I think being in a cut is a huge mental load for women. And I think it's eventually those hunger and satiety hormones are going to catch up, right? They're going to say, like, we are hungry. We're not as satisfied with what you're giving. It's going to be sort of this discomfort of like learning to tolerate that discomfort. And so I'm a big believer in figuring out maintenance calories first and then doing a finite cut, but having an end goal, not just being in this cut for the past year of on and off, and I'm on during the week and I'm off during the weekends. Like, we're gonna dedicate, these next even 4 weeks, right? You don't have to go super long. You can get meaningful change in a shorter amount of time. But so that's the next step. And then the third step, whenever they finish up either the 8 week or 12 week, however long they want to go, then going to maintenance, going back to maintenance for a period of time. I would probably prefer them to go, 4 to 6 weeks, but you can go 2 to 4 weeks and then go back. But I want to give the body a break. I want to give the brain a break. I want to sort of recover the body a little bit and then go back into it. And yes, if you lose a significant amount of weight, you're not going to need as much calories as you did before. And that's because there's not as much of you now. And so going back and finding the maintenance calories there. And actually, the other piece that I think a lot of people don't think about, but there's a lot of validity to spending time at maintenance and actually just working on building that lean mass, even a little bit over maintenance. Because again, it's going to build your metabolic rate. And you have all these women who have yo-yo dieted on and off for the past 10, 20 years. And that metabolic rate has adapted. And so we have to get them a little bit higher so that they're not hungry at night.
Oh wow, there are so many things
I know, I'm sorry.
no to talk about. Honestly, I just absolutely love it, especially how you're highlighting the importance of practicing maintenance. And I specifically say practicing maintenance because I think most people underrate this phase in a periodization, if they even think of weight in terms of a periodization. But as you say, exactly, most people either spend time losing weight or gaining weight. There is like that in between is the hardest for most, where we do want to spend the majority of our time in, though. And that's why you do need to practice it and build that skill of like, okay, what is actually required for me just to simply stay here, to not yo-yo around, to feel energized, to build that muscle. And that's where we can truly thrive. That is like the place to be. So I love how you're like really emphasizing that in your coaching, and also that you're capping the time of the cut for mental and physiological reasons. And I think the third thing that you highlighted so well is like, let's not half-ass things, because that's the other thing. Like when people do these never-ending diets, it's like you're never fully committed, and like you're just sort of like wishing around your life, which is busy, and then one day you're hitting it, and one day not. No, let's get in and out. Like, let's commit to this. And we're not gonna pick a period of time where you're like on vacation, or we're not gonna pick a period of time where you have 100 deadlines at work. Like, let's plan this out and make sure you're actually able to follow this. So this is like super, super valuable what you just laid out there. Yeah, and so is this basically your 6-month lifestyle program Nourished, or maybe you can take us a little bit through what that entails all in all?
So Nourish is my 6 month nutrition and lifestyle coaching program. I started it as a 3 month program, and then I was like, oh, well, at 3 months, we're just finally getting them like to a higher maintenance level. And truly, I was like the women who come to me and who want to work with me, we've got deeper resolve to get after than just the weight loss, right? And so that is part of the process that we figure out your maintenance calories go into the cut from there. But it's also deeper than that, right? It's how are you actually sleeping? Because we know that if you're not getting, an adequate and quality sleep, then also those hunger and satiety hormones I talked about earlier are going to be dysregulated for the next day. It's also talking about just like the stress and how are we handling it and how are we recovering? So like if stress eating is the go-to, like how are we going to develop a new toolbox for you? Because when you're in that tunnel vision, the toolbox isn't going to be there unless you have like physically made it. What else? So nutrition, sleep, stress management, and of course movement, right? I always tell, and I just told my women inside Nourish this past week, I said, take off all your calorie burners from your watches, from whatever device it's syncing to, I don't want you to pay attention to it anymore. I want you to move your body because it physically feels empowering and because it helps your brain. It helps anxiety, it helps depression, it helps your mood. Like nobody can take that away from you. No one feels horrible after they're done working out. They're always glad they did it, didn't want to go, glad they did it. And so moving for a way that feels more nourished and more just as a place of this is what I do every day to help take care of my body, I think is incredibly powerful. Because there was a point in my life where I was like, looking at the calorie burn and seeing how can I fit ice cream back in. And that is just like not also the point that I'm going for. And I want people to feel nourished. I want them to still include their favorite foods. I want them to find pleasure in things other than food. That's another thing. But the movement piece of it, unless you're going, more than 60 minutes, I tell them like we don't really need to compensate for it. But if you are, going to be coming more into like an endurance thing, then yeah, we're gonna like map your intake to the outtake. But for now, can we just move in a way that feels really good to us?
Yeah, and I think to that point, also these trackers are so inaccurate and like really like if people think like, oh, I just burned 1,000 calories with my spin class, I can go and have a burger and fries tonight. It just also encourages such an unhealthy relationship with food of like out of exercising something or yeah, so I think that's a very good recommendation. And just circling back around to the plateau thing. So let's say that someone who is going through a weight loss phase themselves, they have seen progress for a couple of months, and now they're like hitting a plateau for, let's say, 2 to 4 weeks. The scale hasn't moved. What do you recommend here to do?
Usually, honestly, a break from the dieting because the mental energy and load that that takes, and that's just the mental side. It's not the physiology side of, having those hunger and satiety hormones sort of like wreak havoc and be screaming at you in the background, please eat. I'm hungry, and so if someone is hitting a plateau, I'm telling them, let's go back to maintenance. Let's just track for 2 weeks, not to diet. I want to see truly where maintenance is. And maybe it is at this lower rate. And so at that time, you get to decide, am I willing to cut further in order to get into a new calorie deficit? Or do I actually need a break? Do I need, 4 to 6 weeks or 6 to 12 weeks where I'm just doing these maintenance calories, practicing them, as you said, because they are harder than being in a deficit, and focusing on the strength training. Maybe you're focusing on steps. I mean, that is another thing that you can start to look at with plateaus is like, what kind of movement are you doing? Do we need to shake it up a little bit? Because again, it's like the body has adapted to what we're doing. And so, do we need to, like our steps at 6,000 and we have room to improve there. That's just like one way to create another little tiny pocket of a deficit. But honestly, for most people, take a break.
That's a good recommendation. I don't think it's talked about often enough. And so I guess circling back around to the beginning, we've spoken about like the importance of food prepping and so on. Do you have any specific tools or that you give your clients as well as to like how long it should take, how often, like once or twice a week, or what kind of foods do you make? Yeah, hit us with your recommendations.
Yeah. So I think the hardest things, although now it's like a little bit easier with like grocery stores, they'll have like prepped proteins, but I think prep protein on hand is huge. And last summer we just got into this habit of we would just grill like 3 or 4 pounds of chicken at a time, so that we had it. And kind of like what you were talking about earlier, like we can mix and match, right? So I can make a chicken taco, I can make a bowl, I can make a salad. I can make a lot of things if I just have a few different ingredients prepped. And then so a couple of like little strategies or tools here is never just make enough for today. Make enough for 3 or 4 days. Because you can either freeze it if you're not going to use it and pull it out on a day when you don't feel like cooking. Or you can just eat off that all week. I typically always have at least sort of like 2 lean proteins prepped and on hand. I have like a Chipotle chicken that's a copycat recipe that like I'm obsessed with, but I've actually gotten into this like reverse marinade situation where you sort of pat your protein dry, salt, pepper, a little bit of oil, grill it, and then you toss it in the marinade. It's so good. So that's a little tool. What else? Keeping a grain on hand, I think, is super helpful. So I have a rice cooker, and I'll just do like a double batch of like quinoa or rice. Because I think it's easy to fill in with your veg and fruits. Like fruits are usually fresh, and you just have to cut them up or just eat them. And then frozen, like I keep a ton of like just like frozen mixed variety veggies in our freezer because it's so easy to just add and heat it up quick. I will sort of like I'll also like roast maybe a big pan of them if I want to, but it kind of depends also on the season. And I heard this really good tip from a chef once, which she was like, in the summer, you want cooler things because you're hot. And in the winter, you want colder things like the soups and the wraps and all of that stuff. And so I think that's a helpful tip, like sort of like knowing what you're actually craving. And then this is one last tool that was really helpful for me when I first started this journey, is we had a horrible takeout habit. And I would ask myself, like, well, what is it from takeout that I'm really craving? Is it a burger? Is it Chinese food? Like whatever it is, but then I would just figure out how to spin that into like a more healthy, meal, and just always add the veggies. Always add the veggies.
I love that last tip because it also makes sure or like kind of covers that you're actually really enjoying and looking forward to your meal. So I mean, even with a burger, you could make that super easy and healthy at home. Like just get the patties and you could have it in a lettuce wrap, or you know have somewhat healthier buns, or maybe just half a bun with that, or with Chinese, add some maybe sugar-free sweet and sour sauce and add the veggies in there. So some really practical tools, or if all else fails, learn how to build that into your food budget. So
Yeah,
just
exactly.
for the week, because on occasion that's not a bad thing either. So yeah.
Yeah.
What about breakfast or snack options? Because that's often where I feel like people get stuck the most, and they're
Yeah.
like with really low protein into
Yeah.
the morning.
I will tell you, I am not a big snacker. I would rather eat three bigger meals than to snack in between. That's been like sort of a game changer for me. Plus snacking for me kind of becomes a slippery slope. Like it's like, oh, I'll just have one handful of chips and then it's like two and then three. So I try to pad my meals a little bit heavier than the snacks. But for breakfast, I will say, okay, so today I made a Greek yogurt smoothie with frozen berries, flax, chia. I also saw this thing where they dipped the rim of their glass smoothie cup with Greek yogurt, and then they put freeze-dried strawberries.
Oh, that looks
So
cool.
you felt like kind of fancy. I love like the culinary experience of like feeling like I'm doing something luxe. So I will do smoothies. I've also been on a huge veggie omelet kick lately. So I will just get like bell peppers, mushrooms, spinach, and I'll just chop them all up, put them in the containers, and then they're ready to just saute quick in the morning, add some eggs to it, call it good. And then I'm a big oatmeal fan as well. So I'll go do like oatmeal with maybe like a Greek yogurt on this side or something like that. But I'm always just trying to pair protein, fiber, and getting a decent amount in at breakfast because I think breakfast sets you up for the whole day.
Yeah, and I like the smoothie tip here, like for busy people, because I mean that's n not necessarily something you need to prep ahead. Like it's in probably 5 minutes, you can easily
Yeah.
whip that up. Or if you really wanted to, you can prepare that the night before and then just blend it up in the morning for like a minute,
Yep, you
and
can do the
you're
smoothie
up
packs the night
for.
before. I will also say the Real Food Dietitians have a great blog for tons of like plant forward recipes there, and they have a really good like egg bake. So if you do have those busy mornings, make the egg bake on the weekend so you can just grab and go. And then I've also done a fair amount of like breakfast tacos or burritos that I just end up like freezing and just pulling out as I go. It's just a way to control for, again, just the nutrition quality, making sure like you can buy these things, right? But I think that when you can make them at home, it's just a little bit better.
Absolutely. And even if restaurants have or display the caloric information,
Oh, yeah.
the 17-year-old high school kid who's preparing your meal is not going to weigh out exactly that teaspoon of oil that they're using, supposedly using for
No
their
way.
cooking. So you're definitely erring more on the side of caution if you're preparing your own meals in a weight loss phase. Molly, you've given us so many practical tools here, especially for food prep, for food quality. So I think we've absolutely achieved our objective for
I'm
this
good.
today. I'd love to hear if you have one last recommendation as it pertains to like time crafting or just how to optimize your time for the listener.
I think the biggest thing with the time craft is take the time to do the time audit, because I think it's easy to feel like, oh, well, I know the things that I want to do. I think it's really eye-opening when you start to rate them for how happy or how not happy they made you. And I think it actually also opens up a conversation for whoever you're with or around, your partner, whatever. If there are tasks on there that are like zeros for you, they might actually be, your spouse or partner might not care about picking up that task for you, you know? And now all of a sudden, if that is happening, now you have another pocket of time that has opened for you. And so I think it's just an eye-opening experience for figuring out and really putting pen to paper, like truly what things are bringing you joy, how you want to prioritize it. And I will say, in the summer, you know, when the kids are like in camps and the schedule is so wackadoodle, a time craft is so helpful on a Sunday afternoon to just take 10, 15 minutes to draw out the current schedule and look at where your pockets are, plug in the times where you're going to do the grocery shopping, where you're going to meal prep, where you're going to read your book, where you're, you know, the things that actually bring you joy, because the happier you are, the easier all this other stuff is going to be.
Love it. Absolutely. Molly, thank you so much for your time. I will make sure to put all your handles in the show notes, especially also the link to your Nourished 6-month lifestyle program. And yeah, just truly grateful for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so fun.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Molly. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you're looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.